By the time we had finished eating, we had passed out of view of the Presidium. We had left most of the Slines Quarter behind us and were moving across a sort of tidal zone that was part of the city when the city was big and part of the country when it wasn't. Where a tidal zone would have driftwood, dead fish, and uprooted seaweed, this had stands of scrawny trees, animals killed by vehicles, and tousled jumpweed. Where the tidal zone would be littered with empty bottles and wrecked boats, this had empty bottles and abandoned fetches. The only thing of consequence was a complex where fuel trees that had been barged down from the mountains were chewed up and processed. There we were caught for a few minutes in a traffic jam of tanker Drummonds. But few of these were going our way, and soon we had got clear of them and passed into the district of vegetable gardens and orchards that stretched beyond. In my vehicle, besides me and Furman Beller, were Arcibald, Saman, and 200 or Fraz, Kermalithu, and Harbert. The other vehicle contained Cord, Rosk, Leo, Barb, Jad, and another Edharian from the 100er map, Fra Kriskin. I noted a statistical oddity, which was that there was only one female, and that was my Sib, who was pretty unconventional as females went. Intramuros, we didn't often see the numbers get so skewed. Extramuros, of course, it depended on what religions and social mores prevailed at a given time. Naturally, I wondered how this had come about and spent a little while reviewing my memories of the hour-long scramble to get people into vehicles. Of course, the biggest factor in determining who'd go in which group was how one thought about Orlo and the mission to go and find him. Perhaps there was something about this foray that smelled good to men and bad to women. We numbered 12, not counting Ganeliel Crade. This was a common size for an athletic team or a small military unit. It had been speculated for a long time that this was a natural size for a hunting party of the Stone Age, and that men were predisposed to feel comfortable in a group of about that size. Anyway, whether it was a statistical anomaly or primitive behavior programmed into our sequences, this was what we had ended up with. I spent a few minutes wondering whether Tulia and some of the other sewers in the Straight to Tredegar contingent hated me for letting it come out this way, then forgot about it, since we needed to think about navigation. From the drawing that Arcibald had supplied, which showed the profile of a range of mountains in the distance, and from certain clues in the story of Saint Blaise as recorded in the Chronicles, and from things that Saman looked up on a kind of super Gija, we were able to identify three different isolated mountains on the Cartabla, any one of which might have been Bly's Butte. They formed a triangle about 20 miles on a side, a couple of 100 miles from where we were now. It didn't seem that far away, but when we showed it to Furman, he told us we shouldn't expect to reach it until tomorrow. The roads in that area, he explained, were new gravel, and it would be slow going. We could get there today, but it would be dark and we wouldn't be able to do anything. Better to find a place to stay nearby and get an early start tomorrow. I didn't understand new gravel until several hours later when we turned off the main highway and onto a road that had once been paved. It almost would have been faster to drive directly over the earth than to pick our way over this crazed puzzle of jagged slabs. Arcibald was uncomfortable being around Saman, which I could tell because he was extremely polite when addressing him. Complaining of motion sickness, he moved up to the seat next to Furman and talked to him in Fluckish. I sat behind him and tried to catch up on sleep. From time to time, my eyelids would part as we caught air over a gap in the road and I'd get a dreamy glimpse of some religious fetish swinging from the control panel. I was no expert on arcs, but I was pretty sure that Furman was Bayesian Orthodox. At some level, this was just as crazy as believing in whatever Ganeliel Crade believed, but it was a far more traditional and predictable form of crazy. Still, if a group of religious fanatics had wanted to abduct a few carloads of avowed, they couldn't have done a slicker job of it. That's why I snapped awake when I heard Furman Beller mention God. Until now, he'd avoided it, which I could not understand. If you sincerely believed in God, how could you form one thought, speak one sentence, without mentioning him? Instead of which, deolaters like Beller would go on for hours without bringing God into the conversation at all. Maybe his God was remote from our doings, Or, more likely, maybe the presence of God was so obvious to him that he felt no more need to speak of it than did I to point out all the time that I was breathing air.